Let's get started, Ken. First item is proposed event calendar for 2025.
Thank you, Mayor. I put a little bit of information in the packet. If we could advance to the next slide. There's really two tables here that we put in your materials. These are, this is a list or a table of events that occur every year. And hopefully this is helpful for you to have looked through, and you can see some of the things that we do. We added the senior lunch bunch, which Councilmember Baskin mentioned when we talked about putting this on the agenda. And then some have mentioned, I think the mayor mentioned this in the last meeting, that we might want to consider a different date for the fall cleanup. So this is our opportunity. It's not your only opportunity if you wanted to spend more than one meeting on this, but to have looked through these dates and kind of considered, at least thought about what we are accustomed to doing, what we normally do in the city. These are less event-oriented and more just things that occur, activities that the city does. And then if we go to the next slide, this is really the list of events, and I think this is mostly what the council has been talking about as you've made an assignment for us to discuss city events. And and I don't really have any direction or recommendations for you, just that this is a time for us to look at these events and discuss them, and hopefully we can answer questions if you have questions about how much these things cost. We have a budget here, and we amongst all the staff, we can probably give you a picture of how many people have attended certain events if you want to know those things, or any other questions you might have about these.
Ken, we had a really good discussion, and we'll probably hear more about that later, but in the Parks and Arts, Trails and Recs Committee. And a few of these events, when we looked at them, were not necessarily well attended, or maybe the budget, the attendance and the demographics that it reached didn't necessarily justify the budget. Of course, all of this is fairly small when we're talking budget. It just is. But still, I still feel very strongly that one of our major jobs is to just protect the tax dollar and make sure that everything is being spent the way the citizens would want it to be spent. And heaven knows in this day and age, every penny counts. So a few of these events I think will be presented later, but we would maybe suggest we don't continue next year just based on attendance. And a couple we put on like kind of a watch list to see how they do next year. Like the NSL Reads, I guess in the past it's not done real well, but this year was a great turnout and it did really well. And so we'll kind of watch and see how that goes. One conflict that was brought up, and I think this goes to a bigger discussion that we will be having again, is that we have health and wellness doing some events and then parks and arts doing some events. And for example, on our trail cleanup day, was it the trail cleanup day that there was the conflict? Peter got a call last minute from health and wellness asking if he could lead a hike. And oh, it was the kite day. And he said, well, I'm actually at the park, Tunnel Springs, setting up for our city kite festival. And so they were both planned on the same day because the right hand doesn't necessarily know what the left hand is doing. And we have multiple committees planning city activities, but not necessarily scheduling with each other. So I just think that goes to the bigger question of, should we be looking at reallocating responsibilities because there's some duplication. So that's kind of where our discussion went, and we will hear more later on that, but those are some thoughts I have to maybe start the ball rolling.
I was looking for the, in the action items, I was looking for when or a status on the conversation about committees, and I didn't find it easily, but can you remind us what's our process to look at our committee structure?
Yeah, on November 6th, we were planning to have some, take some action on that and have a proposal.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what the topic was on November 6th. What did you say?
Well, we had that conversation broached about our committees. Do we combine? Do we not combine?
Oh.
That kind of thing.
I see.
Can you let me know what type of feedback you're looking for at this point with this list? Do you want us to go through each activity and like give a thumbs up or a thumbs down? Is this the moment to have those conversations? Or were we just kind of having an orientation to the land so that we can think about it and bring it up at another time?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I apologize for not framing this in a more maybe focused way. I think the staff, as we get close to the end of the year, and we're not out of time by any means, but we would like to publish a calendar. We do that every year. The council doesn't necessarily approve it. Some of you have mentioned to me that you'd like to be more involved in the calendar. And so I think this is a first attempt to do that. And so if you don't feel like you can take some final action tonight, that's fine. But we ought to keep working on this so that fairly soon we could publish the 2025 calendar of events and have it be an accurate calendar.
I wonder if it might be helpful to see the presentation by the Parks, Charles Arts and Recreation Board before we go through these, because we might take their what they have to say before we make any decisions. But I will say one thing that speaks to what Suzette brought up. The trail series that we brought back this year is not listed on here, and maybe it doesn't need to be. Maybe that is one that we are not doing, but that's not listed on here.
Okay. That's a good one, though, to have some feedback on. If you want to have the trails series, then we need to amend this.
And I that might go to another point. I know that, Elisa, you mentioned that the Unity and Community events might be chaired now and put on by citizens rather than by the health and wellness. And I do think that then leads to the conversation of what of these are city-sponsored, city-sanctioned, going on our city calendar versus maybe the hikes, the Unity and Community that are maybe more citizen-sponsored, sanctioned, and not on our overall calendar, but maybe in our newsletters or sending out. I think we should be very intentional on what, as a city, we're saying these are our city-sponsored events. If they're kind of half-hearted or low budget or poor turnout, it can reflect poorly on North Salt Lake City. Also, if they're controversial or not appreciated, it can reflect on North Salt Lake City. So we should probably be intentional on which of these activities do we want to put our stamp and our name and the backing of our city staff and budget to, and which are maybe this is happening as an FYI and you're all invited in our monthly newsletter, but not necessarily a city-sponsored event. I don't know whether we want to have that conversation or when would be the right time for that as well.
In addition to that, I was hoping to see hard costs and soft costs breakouts of these events, so we have a better idea of what
I can kind of run through that for you if you'd like.
I liked Elisa's suggestion though, of mm-hmm. maybe, and then we can
we can
shoot down
costs.
Everything they want to do. And
did you bring the costs? Because I know we talked about it. No, I think Linda probably has that in notes, and so we did go through hard and soft costs, including staff time on the parks and arts activities, and that is very helpful. And I think it is a metric we should look at.
Why don't we dovetail right now and pivot to the presentation? So let's go with Emily. Let's go with you first on this.
Hi, Mayor and City Council. My name's Emily Carr. I'm with the Parks, Trails, Arts, and Rec Advisory Board. And I don't know if I should reference that calendar. We have a list of things that we put on there that were more just recommendations from our board. We didn't have any specific details about the calendar. The two things that we'll be presenting on are separate a little bit from the calendar, if that gives anything. But I can go ahead and get into this. If I can. Right, we'll advance. Okay. So a mural program for the city. I'm just going to call it the PTAR Advisory Board, have discussed a mural program for the last few months. And so we wanted to come to City Council with a proposal that we had. And just a little bit background, many Utah cities have mural or public art grant programs for their cities. And there's been community interest that led the advisory board to investigate the Discover Davis mural program. That's something that has been happening annually since about, I think, 2022 with Davis County. And so we looked into it for this year, but just with the different timeframes and requirements for submitting an application, 2024 was unfeasible. And so our advisory board wants to recommend the city create a mural program to prepare for the 2025 Discover Davis grant opportunity. So this would be going into the process, not necessarily we're not asking for money to be given to a grant program, but asking for the city to in-house create a program, which I'll get into a little bit further. But just a little bit of an overview about the Discover Davis grant program. It's really a part of the Davis County Tourism Events. That's what Discover Davis is. And it is specifically hoping to increase the economic impact that the arts bring to the community in Davis County, as well as offer visitor experience and really add a sense of place in the community. And the program is intended to increase the number of public murals outside in Davis County. And their ultimate goal is to be able to organize a mural tour map within Davis County and support communities in beautifying their areas. And I just included some of the eligibility and requirements. One of the reasons why we would need a process created. The application to Davis County has to be submitted by a private business owner or city. It has to be approved beforehand, before work commencing. Cities can be awarded multiple grants per year. There has to be some sort of grant funding match, and they have to be outdoors. And this is, I won't go into it.
Emily, sorry, is it a,
yes.
Is it a 50-50 match?
Yes.
Okay.
And so for the application criteria, one of the things that they're really looking for is engaging community, really like helping a place, with beautification, being in high traffic areas. They want this to be a partnership. So really something that is community, focused, which would be, I think, really beneficial to the city of North Salt Lake. Previously funded murals I just included a list there that they have in Farmington, Bountiful, and more, and just some examples of previous murals. The one on the right, I believe it's on the right for you all as well, with the flowers, that is a pedestrian tunnel that runs underneath Main Street. So it really is not a very beautiful place, but it's turned into something that's really fun for the community. And then another example of another city, South Salt Lake has been a big champion of murals. They have an extensive mural program, and they have made it an annual kind of self-guided event every year where they include other businesses and restaurants and create maps so that community members can really explore their city and the different businesses and art that has there. And it's been a really popular, fun thing. Individuals and groups will create tours, such as the University of Utah, outside of the city. And so it's really brought a lot of people into the creative industry zone of South Salt Lake. And then just the city mural grant opportunities. What we're recommending is creating an in-house mural program. And then once a program is created, that process, then there are multiple grant opportunities that can be explored, variety of sponsorships, partnerships with building owners, and of course the Davis County Mural Grant Program. This is something that it would need to be adjusted just because we're now out of September, but just an estimate of like what this program would entail. So there is some timing that needs to be involved, planning, creating drafts, bringing things to city council, creating a theme, finding a location, an artist, that would all need to be part of this program. And so our recommendation is to authorize city staff to develop a mural program in-house to prepare for the 2025 Discover Davis grant opportunity and any additional opportunities that could come up in the future. And thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I had one more.
Yeah.
Is this Discover Davis grant program, is it limited to murals only, or does it cover any kind of art?
It's a mural program specifically.
Emily, this is a great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very well done. Maybe you could speak to us a little bit to your knowledge of what kind of dollar amount is attached here. If we were to go forward and authorize a continuing in-house program, I don't know that I have a good grasp on, I think it's a $10,000 match from
yes.
Davis. So I don't know that I have a good grasp on what $20,000 a year would get us, or are we looking at $20,000 is a base per year and then the city would need to come up with a lot more? Just maybe, can you speak to the dollar amount?
Yeah, so I don't have specifics on dollar amounts. I think if once a mural program is created, that's when through that process, some of those things would be investigated and brought to city council if needed.
I can help a little bit with that. I did a little research on some of the other cities like Midvale and South Salt Lake. And what they've all told me is that it's really important that you set the budget. So they're doing, like in Midvale, they've done some where they'll say, they put a request out for artists and they say, this will pay $5,000 for a mural. And then those people make a presentation of what, the artists make a presentation of what they would do for $5,000, how big they can do and what the frame would be. And what the success they found is that if you were a commercial business and you went out to have the whole side of your building painted, they might charge $20,000 to that commercial business. But in this type of program, these artists want to get their name and their art out into the community. And so they're willing to take less fee than they would normally take. But it's really important. The gal from Midvale that runs their program told us that it's really important that you set the budget and say, this is how much we're going to pay for a mural, and this is the location. And then when they submit the art, then they would match that art up with a building owner, because the county or the city has to approve of the content, and the artist has to be willing to draw it, and then the building owner also has to want it on their building. So they would have to, they sometimes have to match up available buildings that desire murals with the artists.
Sherry, did either of those cities mention problems with the murals being graffitied?
So they said it's really important with the willing buyers to have the, or with the building owners to have an agreement for maintenance and to, as to say who's going to maintain it if it gets graffiti. Who's going to pay the artist to come back and fix it if somebody graffitis it?
So I have a mural on the garage that the RDA put on there downtown Salt Lake. Oh. And I got a call one day from the RDA saying, hey, the mural's been graffitied, and the artist has agreed to come back for $6,000 and repair it. And they wanted me to pay the $6,000, and I drove by at 20 miles an hour, and I honestly couldn't tell. You know, it's one of those really busy, I honestly couldn't tell where it had been graffitied, but I'm sure it had. But I told them no. I don't know if they fixed it or if it just stayed that way. But that's always a concern.
And I think that's why they recommended that you have an agreement with the building owner as to who's going to maintain it. You want to make sure that they're willing to maintain it. And they also did say, the Midvale lady said that they can treat the mural with the anti-graffiti stuff, but you have to be really, really like that mural, because it's really hard to take the anti-graffiti stuff off on it if you want to change it.
Well, and that might speak to my next question, and Sherry might have this knowledge, but if they choose to sell the building and the new owner, is that part of the REPC that they're going to keep the mural, since the city now put in, you know, $10,000+, or is that still just, it's a private sale and they can do what they want?
I think it's dependent upon the terms of that agreement with the original owner, okay, whether that agreement has to carry on to a new owner, or maybe it might have a term of said, you know, that mural has to stay for 5 years or something like that. And then if they sell it or they want to paint over it, that then they can do that.
I did notice in Salt Lake, several of the murals that I had seen right on the 13th by that Walmart and Target, they're gone. So they're painted just, one was green and one was orange now. And so I just wondered, was that a tagging problem and they just got tired of keeping up on it, or a building sale? I didn't know, but it would be maybe interesting and good to know why those are gone, you know.
I kind of find myself putting this in the bin of, there's a huge upside to doing it, and there's also a lot of unknowns, like we don't really know, and so maybe it's the kind of thing that we approach on a pilot basis. But I don't know if that makes, what your opinion is on that, but then my question is, can you give us just a sense of what it means to put up a, to set up a program? Does that mean a committee? Does that mean, What is that, or just a sense of what that is?
Yeah, from my understanding, so Allie helped put this chart together for us, kind of showing what a program development and would look like. And so really, I think a lot of it would be starting creating some of those processes, and like, how do we determine location? How do we, you know, like find artists, how do we do those different things, and creating more of a process that we can use as a template for each year, or, you know, however we decide. And because of the advisory board being like with arts, I think that's something that, you know, I opened a discussion, but that advisory board would help with, and then bring to city council for any approval that would be needed to move forward with the county and city.
So, Ted, as a follow-up to that, Camille Thorpe had identified a property on Redwood Road. And it's a big blank wall and, frankly, not attractive. And so I went out and talked to the tenant in the building, At the time, they didn't own the building, but I think they were interested possibly in buying the building. But I don't think there was an objection from the owner or the tenant to put the mural on the wall, but there was no commitment to maintain at all. That would fall back on us. And I think the size of this wall, I'm just shooting from the hip, but my guess is it would take, you know, the 10 from Davis and the 10 from Salt Lake, or from North Salt Lake, to get this done. And so, you know, a $20,000 mural that we would be on the hook to maintain going forward would be my guess.
I think that's why Midvale told us that it's important to set the budget, because if you set the budget that we are requesting from artists that they give us an idea of what they would do for this for $5,000 or $10,000, whatever the amount that we decided was, and if they came in and said, I can do a mural that's 200 square feet or 100 square feet or whatever that is, maybe it's 100 square feet, or 10, you know, but be 10 by 10. And then if that was one that the committee selected and wanted to recommend, then they might match them up with a business that had that size of a wall, or might only take up part of a wall, because it doesn't have to be the whole wall necessarily. So I think that's really, but without the committee doing some research about how we want to structure that, how we want to look for artists, how do we want to identify the buildings, what themes do we want to do? Without those basis, it's really shooting in the dark, just applying for a grant. And it doesn't seem like it would be very successful. And so that's what they were trying to do, is put something in place, a process of this is how we're going to choose it, this is how we're going to bring it forward for the approvals of the city council, and how we're going to match it to building owners.
You know, I know that there's a couple communities that's their deal, like Leavenworth in Washington, which is German, and Solvay in California. Some of those cities have this dialed. They have it all. And so maybe a portion of this will be to do a little bit of maybe even writing to the city chamber, commerce, or whatever, how it is that they go about it. Because I think the maintenance issue is big. And I think also, if we're going to have a theme, maybe it's something like that, where it's a theme that's more citywide than just we're going to have a well here, and then over here we're going to, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And so that's what I think we would be looking for from the committee, to make a recommendation to city council that either they'll make a recommendation that said we should change this theme every year, or maybe the recommendation is going to be our theme is
orchards.
Orchards.
Yeah.
Right? Or
whatever.
Sunsets.
Yeah. Kindness or whatever, one of those types of things, and it has to be something that relates to that every year.
But I do think that there are people out there who can provide a lot of answers to us that have done this for generations, you know, 60, 70 years.
Yeah, that's kind of how we came up with this, is by talking to these other cities, and they really said it was important to have a process and have those agreements drafted so that we know what we're going to ask them when we go to seek the building owner's permission to do it. We know what we're asking him. Are we asking them to maintain this building? We really need to have all of those ducks in a row before we start.
I know that in Kearns they had a project where a mural went up and people found it objectionable, but it was painted at that point. And so that's the other piece, you know.
That's why it's very important to have the theme and the actual art that's going to be painted approved by the city council.
Yeah.
Well, I love this flow chart. Well done, Allie. and I appreciate the work that it sounds like you have put in to do this. I believe we already as a city council approved $10,000 conditional of the match. But we didn't have the time to do that. I really like Ted's idea of a pilot program. So we have this great process that you've put together. I think it's a really well thought out flowchart process. So perhaps the step forward today would be that we approve a one-year pilot of a budget of the $10,000 that we'd already really approved, conditional to the match, that we get the grant, and try this. Mm-hmm. And then we can go forward. It can be brought up again, and we can decide whether that was great. We want to try for this every year and just be the most colorful city on the map, or that was really rough and we learned a lot of things. So maybe a pilot, a 1 year, let's take this flow chart, let's follow it from October on, try for the grant and see what we can do, and then revisit whether we're going to make this a permanent budget item or not.
And they would bring back the program laid out in the specifics in around February or March, mm-hmm. to say, this is what we're recommending for theme. This is the criteria we're going to use to choose artists. This is, you know, the month of the year that we're going to ask for artists. This is, you know, our target budget is going to be $5,000 or $10,000 per mural or whatever, mm-hmm. the committee comes up with. And then you'll approve that, and then they can go forward and seek artists.
Yeah.
It'll be an official agenda item.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Today's just guidance and feedback. Good. Hey, yes, it's worth your while. You have enough support or not. But in my case, enough support to go ahead and start standing up a program with an eye toward formal action in the
right.
spring.
They didn't want to do all that work and then come to find out in February or March that the council doesn't support a program at all and waste that time. So make most efficient use of their time.
Right. Find out in February or March that Hatch Park's gone up another $1 million. We don't have any money.
Thank you for this presentation. This is fantastic, and I'm really excited about it. I agree with what both Suzette and Ted had spoken to, that I think we're in support, getting this started, moving forward. And then I would just add two pieces. One, if you've ever been to Bentonville, Arkansas, it is the headquarters of Walmart. It's the most charming downtown area you'll ever see, because Walmart...
A little ironic, but yes.
It is. It is. Well, they make it look like a downtown Main Street, USA, because Walmart, or the Walton family, invests a lot of money into making it beautiful, and they have mural art on almost every single building, including 3D art pieces.
So, by the way, famously bikeable city too,
which I love that as well. One item I would like to put towards this group that will be considering the mural is to consider if we have a resident in the city who might want to invest deeply in art around the city, and if they get a hand in saying, we want these types of pieces, would they want to contribute and really have a signature across the city where they get to have a say on what that art looks like. So maybe looking at some external donors as well. And then there were a couple of ideas that were just thrown out here, and I'd like to put them formally in the committee's minds when we're thinking about themes. And I heard orchards, I heard sunsets, and then I would also like to add birds. We have a water or a bird preserve on the west side of the city, and so there might be something to do with birds and waterfowl as well. Thank you.
No mosquitoes. But I like kindness as well, too.
That's the state bird of Minnesota, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you.
Well, let's move on and have Brent come forward too.
Okay, thank you for having me here to present on our another recommendation from the Parks Arts, PTAR, Parks, Trails, Arts, and Recreation Board. We were here a couple of months ago, I think it was in June, and talked about another work session, talked about kind of some key recommendations to keep advancing the trails within the city of North Salt Lake. So we've been meeting again as a subcommittee, and we'd like to bring to you this evening a recommendation to prepare a trails master plan. We have some great trail opportunities, a great system in the Wild Rose, in our East Foothills, and to ensure that system, as well as other to be developed trail systems in North Salt Lake, continue to serve our community effectively and we can invest in them. We propose a trail master plan to help guide that growth, to help us know strategic investments, phasing, priority, etc. The existing unpaved trails, and I do want to emphasize what we're talking about is unpaved trails, not bike lanes, not shared use paths, not the legacy trail, etc. We're talking about unpaved trails in natural open space such as the Wild Rose area. Currently, the existing Wild Rose in North Salt Lake has 9.28 miles of unpaved trails, including a portion of downhill flow, which is for mountain bikes. That system has been around, I think, what I heard, 2012 or something like that. You may know better than that, but since then has not been routinely invested. There has a lot of sections of wildcat trails, user trails that folks have established to access destinations or some discontinuous segments, particularly as the Bonneville Shoreline Trail has come in. It doesn't quite connect to the Wild Rose except through some steep social unauthorized connections, and so we have a vision of correcting that and investing in the unpaved trails to improve that and to make that a really safe, accessible system. To do that, we need some guidance on how we invest, when we invest, and how much we invest to address issues such as erosion, steep grades, switchbacks, refreshing our existing trails, and then providing those new connections, such as to connecting to Bonneville Shoreline to Wild Rose, and then connecting Wild Rose to Tunnel Springs. And then investing in wayfinding, signage, and maps so that those who are unfamiliar have an opportunity to familiarize and use those trails. And then potentially exploring new trailheads to enhance access to those trails, and then providing a guide for trail maintenance. So what is included in a trails master plan? These are some of the high-level contents that we would see. First, an assessment of existing conditions. What are our key needs? And then establishing what that vision for that trails is. And that would be through stakeholder outreach, through some public outreach of those users, and talking to those who frequent those trails. And then an important part is coordination with adjacent cities, Salt Lake City and Bountiful, who both have trails master plans. I was looking through those, particularly the Salt Lake City one, and not quite sure we're all synced up. They are continuing to invest in their trails. I'm not sure they're recognizing what we want to do. And so if we have a trails master plan, we can say, this is our plan, this is what we want to do, and we can make sure that those are coordinated. And then once we go through that needs assessment, we propose, what does that network of new trails look like? What are the maintenance needs on those trails? What is the annual investment that is needed to maintain those trails? What type of wayfinding do we want? It would provide some illustrations of architecturally what that wayfinding looks like, the signage, the branding, et cetera, and it would identify if there are new trailheads that would be needed to supplement this system. And then once we have that set of proposed improvements, we prioritize them, we identify what an estimated cost is for those improvements, what a recommended phasing program is, and then identify some funding strategies, whether that's budget or grant recommendations. And then I think one of the most valuable parts of that is coming out of that master plan is a detailed mapping of where those trails are, GPS routes that then can be constructed. This is an example. I don't expect to be able to see it. This is a map from the Bountiful Trails Master Plan. You can see that they've detailed those and listed out those trails, the mileage, where those go, and it provides an overview of how they connect and a priority on implementation. Did a little bit of research talking to those who specialize in some of these trails master plan development. The firm that did Bountiful City, there's also a firm that did Salt Lake City, And they have quoted, Ali is the one that reached out to some of these firms, and they quoted in the range of 30,000 to 50,000, depending on the level of detail, outreach, et cetera, that would be included in that. There are thinking about implementing the recommendations once we have a master plan in place. There are grant programs that can be used to construct the trails, in particular by the Outdoor Recreation Planning Assistance Program. They provide staff assistance, consultation. They also provide maintenance of trails on an annual basis. I currently am trying to coordinate with them on how we can get on their 2025 summer calendar, where they would come out for a week. And they have a trails crew that's funded by the state of Utah who would come out and invest a week in maintenance. So looking to try and get that scheduled for 2025. And then they also provide those larger grant opportunities, upwards of about $750,000 per grant to do new trail construction. We need that trails master plan in place so that we can pursue these grant opportunities, so we can coordinate with Salt Lake City, so we can coordinate with Bountiful. And then we're not haphazardly saying, hey, let's create this little connection, the BST to Wild Rose, but we do it in a well thought out manner that is going to last for generations. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question, and it might just be a lack of knowledge. I see that you're saying this is all about unpaved trails. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like you to describe what an unpaved trail is, and then is there some sort of a conflict or a political position regarding unpaved versus paved?
So unpaved trails, we're talking about those up in the Wild Rose that are natural surface. They are meant for hikers or mountain bikers, and then as compared to something like the Legacy Trail, which is a paved trail, and that is paved for cyclists, for walkers, more of an urban type environment. The grades are ADA accessible. You have the lighting, you have the street, you know, the, maybe some landscape improvements. It's more in the urban, providing connectivity to the parks and different activity centers and destinations, as opposed to the unpaved are more forest service lands or natural open space areas that are not paved, don't have the lighting, don't have that heavier infrastructure, more for recreation purposes as opposed to utility, commuting uses.
And so what is this sort of tug and, you know, the distinction, and my understanding is with the paved, you have a lot of conflict between the hiker and the mountain biker.
Yeah, so and that's on the unpaved,
right?
Where, yeah, exactly, where you have those who prefer to mountain bike with a downhill flow going faster, and then you have the hikers, and you'll have systems like Wild Rose. We do have a section, what we call downhill flow, that is just for going downhill through the Wild Rose, and you're not supposed to hike uphill or downhill on those, and that's to provide a separate facility for those riding mountain bikes. Bountiful City just constructed a similar facility in Mueller Park Canyon. It's a downhill flow trail starting from up by the Elephant Rock area down into the canyon, and it's trying to deconflict, and so you don't have those potential for harm into each other.
Brent, or maybe Ken even here. So there was some kind of master plan for the Jordan River Parkway Trail that covers maybe 10, 15 cities. And I assume the same thing is true on the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. And I've hiked on the Bountiful section a little bit, but I'm kind of fuzzy. Does it just bypass us in our trail system?
The Bonneville Shoreline goes to up east of Wild Rose, and it stops pretty much at the Salt Lake City nor Salt Lake City boundary.
But there is plans to take it into Salt Lake.
There are plans to connect. Salt Lake City has been going through a process over the past couple of years to first prepare their master plan, and then they started construction a couple of years ago and then had to put a hold on that for some political and stakeholder reasons.
So on Bountiful Boulevard and Eagle Ridge Drive, there were signs at least years ago that said Bountiful Shoreline Trail.
That sign is still there on Bountiful Boulevard. But now we have the actual Bonneville Shoreline Trail.
Yeah.
So I don't think that sign is necessarily helpful anymore.
And then I think I've asked this question in another meeting, but Mayor Cox has this Eisenhower
Utah Trail Network.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that have to be a paved trail to
that
qualify?
That does have to be a paved trail, and that is for commuting purposes. That is, you can certainly use it for recreation, but the purpose is, he's described it as the interstate system of the trails
yeah.
connecting,
yeah,
and that's a paved system that would be
for commuting and
maintained.
I'll bet Ted Knowlton got a hold of the mayor or the governor and swayed that whole decision.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd like to just clarify, we would like to, if you want to direct the committee to go forward with seeking a trails master plan, that we would then seek grant money to help cover that 30 to 50%,
yeah,
or $30,000 to $50,000 that the trail master plan would actually cost. So
Allie and I just talked about that, and the grants she's found don't cover development of the master plan, they cover implementation of the master plan.
But the TLC grants might cover that. Maybe.
I don't think that TLC would cover that because
okay,
TLC
is
yeah, it's more about the utility trip, the trip that gets you to a destination.
We would certainly try really hard to find other grant
so,
opportunities
I
to help
Bountiful,
pay for that plan.
Bountiful did this, right? They had,
yes.
And so, and that meeting we went to, North Salt Lake was very well represented. I think Sherry was there, Ken was there, Mayor was there, Ted was there. I was shocked at the number of years that Bountiful has put an effort and manpower and money into this. So definitely that should be one of our first calls is, did they find any grant money for this initial master plan for the trails? I was also really grateful because the way it was presented by Kate Bradshaw was, we've done all this work and now we're willing to share all this knowledge and the things we would not do again so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. So I do think this is a great time and season in our city to be able to ride the coattails of Bountiful. I'm in the trails a little bit, but my husband's in the trails every single day, and he keeps saying, oh my word, Bountiful, man, they've really put some work into their trails. They're looking great. They've invested money, and he's very impressed with their trails. But they have put in the work, and it does show now. So I think it's a great time to be able to access that knowledge. Are you asking, and great presentation, thank you. Are you asking for council approval for this master plan cost today, or kind of the nod that we like this idea and would love to find out if we can find a grant and then make a monetary approval at a later date?
I think the question before the council is really, do we think that creating a trails master plan is the next step for our city? I think the city staff and the committee members are recommending to you that yes, now is the right time to do that. As in particular, since the meeting that we all attended that you referenced in Bountiful, I think having a trails master plan will open the door for both public and private financial opportunity for us, grants and donors and people like mountain bikers who want more flow trails and others. And so I think this is the right step for us. So that's what we would recommend.
I was going to just, I guess I'm throwing water on this, but Brent, don't you think that you and a couple other serious mountain bikers have a pretty good idea of what we need to do?
A good idea, but there's nothing like taking that to paper and then getting those GPSed, getting full support, getting it institutionalized. And that's what we want to avoid is, hey, Tom knows, he thinks we should do this, and so let's get the crew out and let's go do this, when it hasn't thoroughly been vetted, it's not permitted, it's not sanctioned, and so we're trying to avoid the wildcat approach.
I hear you. I guess I always look at things like this and go, see, I'd rather put $50,000 into building a trail than...
Think of it as $50,000 that it allows you to get the $750,000.
One of my takeaways was that.
Yeah, I think that's what we heard from Bountiful, mm-hmm. was that they needed the professional plan in order to get the trails approved and the permits that were on Forest Service property, as well as to get the funding, but to get just the approvals. And so I think that was the lesson that
not that big, right? $50,000 to unlock additional opportunity.
So I think a plan, the value of the plan for our city is that we would then have a direction. We would know what sorts of trails, where they would be located.
We'd also have buy-in.
And we'd have buy-in. The plan would go through a public process. I think one of the things I think I recognized in the Bountiful meeting was they went through a period of time where they really wanted to make improvement in their trails, but since they didn't have a plan, they lacked some legitimacy on some level. And so in the state of Utah, when local government does things, we do it with using general plan elements, and that's the pattern that's been established in the state, and I think that's the pattern we're going to find we need to have in order to make year-over-year progress on trail building. And I think the other things that Brent and his group have identified is that North Salt Lake needs to look to existing facilities and also have a set of recommendations on how to reinvest in trails that over time are just being ignored and getting, they're just in worse shape year over year. And that's not disparaging anybody. It needs to ratchet up in the attention that it gets from the city and from all of our participants, both volunteers and staff and everybody involved. And I think the plan will do that for us.
I think for North Salt Lake, some of our key differentiators are that we have our hills and we have the river. Those are two things that kind of set us apart. And I'm trying to not use too strong of a term or too pejorative, but I'll just go ahead and say we're getting a little bit outclassed by our neighbors who are really making the most out of their assets. And, you know, we want really a world-class trail system. I think we can do it.
I also think, Brent, you alluded to this, but it's important to keep in mind that there's a user trail that's taking Wild Rose straight up to Bonneville Shoreline. It's been created by users, not by the city, and it's very steep. And so we do need to also, as a city, think about liability. And when we are taking the wildcat approach and just kind of not being intentional and professional, then we do take on liability if someone has a serious accident and we didn't have a professional organization that helps structure that. So it's always a safety measure for this city as well.
So we can't take action today on a budget item, but if we need to look at a budget component in the near term, I would support putting that on the agenda.
Is this something also that once it's, if it's completed and done, that the bike teams can help maintain and do, which would offset some of the maintenance costs for city?
Certainly. One thing I think we do need to do is invest in some good equipment to maintain the trails as well. You know, you get a well-meaning people out there saying, I'm going to stop the drainage problem, and then they dig a ditch and, you know, a cutoff, and then it leads to more issues. And so I think we do need to make sure they're well-constructed and then the right somebody to oversee the maintenance rather than the wildcat approach. Certainly pruning, picking up trash, things like that, but I'm a little hesitant when you say, hey, go solve these drainage issues.
May I make a comment? Thank you. Your expertise is so clear, and you're such a valuable asset for us. I think investing in trails is a great idea. I have two questions, and we might go over time, so if they need to be answered later, that's fine. The first question, I don't understand the world of consulting well enough, but I would love to know why the amount is such an open-ended amount. Like, can we not go to a consulting firm and say, we want to pay you $20,000 for you to help create this plan? What can you create for us for $20,000 is my first question. My second question is, why the separation between paved and unpaved trails? And is that a whole, just a whole separate world? Or why can't that be part of a master plan for the entire city if we're doing a large consultant plan for it?
I think that the question between why is it 30,000 to 50,000 is because when Allie was calling different firms that do these, she didn't have the exact scope that the Trails Committee would be looking for. And so they're saying, well, it could be 30,000 if you only want us to have public meetings twice. If you want us to go out and do a survey that's statistically accurate to find out how many people use trails or why they use it, or go count the people who use the trails and get that kind of level of detail, it's going to cost more. And so without them understanding what the scope is and without us understanding what the scope is to tell them, because we need to know if this is the direction the council wants the committee to go, then it just, she was only able to get rough estimates.
So we could say we want to do a $30,000 plan, yeah, and this is what we're, yeah, okay, great. And then the paved and unpaved?
Yes, paved and unpaved serve different users. For example, the mayor, or I think you were talking about Utah Trail Network. The purpose of that Governor Cox is investing $50 million a year to create that alternative way to commute from North Salt Lake to Salt Lake City. And those are a wide, you know, there's different design criteria, ADA accessible, higher speed bicyclists, walkers, you know, a whole variety of users. And those are in the urban environment, and they're meant to help provide an alternate route for people so they don't have to walk on the, or bicycle on the busy streets. They provide an alternate that's safer, that's more comfortable for those commuting as well as recreation purposes. Whereas up in the foothills, you can't pave those. It's more for getting out in the outdoors, the open space. It's on Forest Service land, and they can't be improved to that same extent. They're not going to be ADA accessible, the same requirements that you would have on a paved system.
And we have an active transportation plan already that we did.
That would include all paved trails.
Yes.
Great.
Right.
Great.
And it's a very different, it's a different discipline. It's a different focus. The firms who are going to do this, you know, a landscape architecture background or an outdoor recreation background, whereas those who are focused on the others are more urban design, transportation, et cetera.
Mayor, one other thing is I think the general plan has another benefit to us, and that is it is the guiding document for 20 years from now or 30 years from now when we aren't even able to ride bikes anymore, maybe, right? And anytime we pass a land use ordinance, we always refer back to it as this is compatible with the general plan. And so it is also an avenue to justify funding. And so I think it's a great idea from a governance standpoint to have a general plan.
So if I were to summarize, I'd say there's support for us to put a proposal together. This would normally probably go through an RFP process or a selection process, which would come back to you. And then, of course, the approval of funding would come back to you, too. So we'll put those things together for you to look at.
One question. What is the anticipated mileage that we're looking at for potential trails in our foothills?
We need a master plan to tell us that.
But we should at least have clear defined goals.
Yeah.
We
want to connect with the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. We want to.
Are we going to be Park City? We're going to have how many miles of trail?
Yeah. Wild Rose is, say, 8 or 9 miles or unpaved trails now. I could, if you're able to expand that and work with the Forest Service into Forest Service lands, I could see that doubling, maybe even tripling. So maybe it's 20 or 30 miles of unpaved trails. I haven't tried to map that out yet, but that would be my guess. You don't have acres and acres. We don't have a massive frontage to work with. Bountiful has a lot more frontage, and I think, I can't remember what their mileage is, but yeah, I don't, just read that, I can't remember what that is, but I would think maybe 20 or 30 miles what we'd get.
All right. Ken, to your question, yes.
Great. We'll put those things together for the council too.
Can I suggest that we take a break, start our regular meeting, and then come back and finish this item in the regular session? So let's take a quick break, and we'll reconvene in 7 minutes.
Can I just say thank you to Brent and Emily before they leave? We thanked Emily, but Brent, thank you for
such
great work always on trails and